All right, if you guys could go ahead and find a seat, we'll get started here in about 37 seconds. So go ahead and grab your coffee, grab some snacks, grab a seat, please and thank you. All right, I'm curious, how many of you guys noticed Park Church's most recent investment on this new floor in this room tonight? Did anyone recognize the room? Thank you. As someone who spends a lot of time in this room, I appreciate this floor. That blue was not cutting it for me. So I'm thankful for that. That's props to Dan Bruner, who's not here tonight. So we have a lot of questions, a lot of good questions, and we're going to get through as many of them as we can. But let's go ahead and get started. Actually, why don't we start with you guys saying your names and then what you guys do 8 to 5.
My name is Tony Giulianel. Yeah. Thank you. I started a website called Google. I work for Wells Fargo, and I am part of our mortgage company in Denver.
My name's Megan Bruner, and my husband's on staff here, and I'm a CPA, and I work for a company called Hine & Associates downtown in their tax department. A certified public accountant.
My name's Mark, and I told you what I did.
Okay. All right, first question. If you're starting from scratch with savings, what do you prioritize first? Emergency fund, debt, long-term savings, or other savings, or other options?
That's a really good question. I think depending on your situation, you should definitely start with a quick emergency fund. So if you are starting out fresh and say you have debt, I think it's smart to at least save a little bit to keep you, to kind of have a buffer for you. So I always just say try to save $1,000 as quick as you can. After that, if you have debt, try to pool your resources to debt payoff instead of savings. If you already have your debt paid off, then you start funding your emergency fund before anything else. Once you get to 3 months or whatever, how many months you want in your emergency fund, then you can really start to focus in on like the retirement, the college, all that. And it's not just like random. It's because an emergency fund will really help you in tough times. Like if everyone has big bills. Like I have like 3 big bills that pop up unexpectedly every year at least. And if one of you loses your job, like it'll probably take at least 3 months typically to find a new job. So that'll help tide you over to not have to like start to pile up the credit cards again at the end.
Tony concurs. We can move on. Would you target paying off school loans the same way you would snowball your money to pay down credit card debt? So basically comparing school loans versus credit card debt.
Depends on the interest rate. So if your credit card debt's at 25% and your school loans are at 7%, pay off your credit card debt. You know, so pay off your highest interest rate debt first and then down to your lowest. Like, for instance, Dan and I have a mortgage interest rate that's just ridiculously low. There's no way that we could ever, there's no investment that we could possibly make that would return that little money. So we should pay that off as slowly as possible. I mean, Dave Ramsey would hate me for saying that, but it just doesn't make sense when our money could be making money in other places. Tony concurs.
Yeah, I mean, there's this idea of arbitrage, right, which is, if I can earn more in a market and rather than pay off my house, I'm going to invest. I think that is a very personal decision around, you know, what are you most comfortable with? I think the Bible talks a lot about being shrewd with your money, talks a lot about being wise with your money. And some people would look at that and say, no, you should just have no debt as a Dave Ramsey might teach. Others would say, if your interest rate's 3%, my wife and I have this argument once a year. She has a school loan. It's at like 1%. She's like, let's pay it off. And I go, we're never paying it off. Ever. If they'll give us $1 million at 1%. So, you know, I think you have to you have to be very comfortable with it, but you have to be very wise about how you approach it.
I think last thing is, credit cards in general are going to have 15% plus interest rate. So I would consider that horrendous debt, like worst type of debt possible. They just eat you alive. Like if you just pay the minimum on your credit cards, it's going to take you like 1,000 years to pay it off. And student loans, though, I would say, I look at clients with student loans every single day. And typically student loans have interest rates between like 3 and 7%. And they're fixed, too. So I am under the mindset, which is different than Dave Ramsey, and I would say it is okay to, once you have like the credit cards paid off and the emergency fund in place, to start to really save in like 401ks and other types of investment accounts, college accounts, if you still have student loans. I think that's totally fine. Because unless you're dealing with like $200,000 in student loan debt, which I've met some people that have that, typically they're lawyers and doctors though, which make a lot of money, so you can pay them off quick. But I would just say, in my opinion, you could feel okay about starting to invest and grow your money in other things while you have student loan debt and certainly mortgage debt.
All right, this came up several times. Real estate / investment properties versus 401k for retirement planning. What do you guys advise?
Both.
Elaborate.
I concur.
Well, here's the deal. Like, real estate right now is really attractive. I think people like real estate because they can see it, they can touch it, they can go in it, and they understand it. It's like real estate, you can go like, you know, look at it and know what it, you know. Thing about it, though, is like we're in a really good real estate market right now. We're in a good stock market right now, too. But real estate can be super expensive to maintain. Real estate is a non-liquid asset, meaning it's not easy to sell a property. If you have real estate as an investment and you got in financial trouble and you needed to sell it, it's not liquid. It's hard to sell. Like, 401ks are different because it's like a retirement account. But say you just had a stock portfolio of like individual stocks, you can sell a stock immediately. So it is liquid. Like, stocks are a liquid investment typically. So there's a big difference between the two. I think it's great to have both. And people have done really well focusing on just one or the other. But yeah.
And you know, I have lots of clients in my practice that they started out with stock investing and then went into real estate. And so once they've built their stock portfolio and kind of have the liquid assets that they can sell off really quick if they need to, they then invested in real estate to diversify their portfolios.
So. And you need liquidity. Like, if you're thinking about buying rental properties, you need cash. Like, I mean, if you have no money in savings at all or like invested that's a liquid asset and the real estate market goes south, like, you're going to have a tough time with that property, right? Because say your renters dry up, you can't find a renter, and you need to pay the mortgage now. So you need to have some cash on hand to be able to do that. Plus, like, if the furnace blows out, the renter's not going to pay for that. Like, you have to pay for it. So you have to just be really careful with rental properties. I think people can be super successful with rental properties for sure. Especially if you can buy them in cash, which is so hard to do.
And typically, you know, the people you see that are super successful with rental properties typically have substantial resources.
Yes.
Or it's their full-time job.
Yep.
So one or the other. And I think, you know, property can be, you know, I don't know if it's this holdover from, like, England and being landowners or what it is that makes it so attractive, but...
it's probably it.
I don't know. Maybe. So... You know, I agree. I think you have to be really careful. I've watched a lot of people overextend thinking, saying, okay, if we just stretch this, we're going to come out the other end and be in great shape. And that's seldom the case.
All right, this one's long. We've talked a lot about arranging our lives so that we can give generously. I feel like my finances are all over the place right now. So where do I start? Basically, how do I approach having and maintaining a budget, which... You touched on some, but basically for someone who's just approaching this, starting to think about it, feel like finances are all over the place, where do you go from there?
Okay, you guys may hate this, but does anybody know what Mint.com is? Half of you hate it and half of you love it. I think that that's a great tool to just know where you spend your money. You know, I was talking to Morgan about it the other day, and Morgan is very detail oriented. So she's got like 35 categories in her mint.com deal, but I've got like 10, you know? And so there are lots of different ways that you can use it, but I think a great place to start is knowing, where is my money going? Where is my heart? Because really, I mean, we spend our money on the things that our heart longs for. So it allows you, I don't know, can I go on a little tangent really quick too?
Please.
Sorry. So the eye, if the eyes are the lighthouse for the body, which it talks about in Matthew, then the things that we feast our eyes upon are the things that are speaking messages to our heart. So I think a lot that Mint does for me is it says like, oh, what am I feasting my eyes on? Because when I look at my expenses in Mint, which they're all my expenses because Dan doesn't spend money. I don't know if any of you guys know my husband, but he's like the most frugal person in the world. We had to get a budget because he married me. Anyway, so I'm looking at it. I'm like, oh, crap. Look at my shopping category. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, that's what my heart's going after. When I'm bored, when I'm whatever, my heart's going there. It's saying like, oh, shopping will fulfill this need or this whatever. So I think that's a great place, is find out, where are you spending your money? What is your heart going to for fulfillment?
Anyway. Yeah, totally agree. Start with tracking what you spend. And Mint's a great way to do it. You know, some banks have spending reports that are a great resource. There's a tab on your online banking that says spending report, and it'll categorize your spending and tell you where you're spending money. If you don't know where you're spending, you can't plan around it. So, I mean, if you're looking for just a place to get a foothold, that's a place to get a foothold. The other thing that I think is helpful for people to get control is how you use direct deposit. So a lot of companies will let you direct deposit into multiple accounts. And that's a great way to control what hits the account you spend money out of. Sarah and I have multiple accounts. We have a tithe account. We have our kind of our normal spending account. You know, so just being able to, and then we have a savings account. So it just breaks out. A lot of companies will let you do direct deposit by percentages. Yep. And the percentages that Mark walked through are a great way to set up your direct deposit. So there's just some simple tools.
It can also be tough, too, if your income, like mine, is all over the board. Like, one month I'll make X amount, the next month I'll make three times that, then the next month I'll make, like, nothing. And it took me, like, 2 years to figure out how to do that. And Kristen's income right now is like that. She's, like, all over the place. So with me, personally, and a lot of you are in that spot, like, you own your own business. Like, you know, some months are good, some months aren't. In my situation, I just have to do it. I have to go in and actually physically pay my bills. It's all linked to my checking account, like ACH payments, but I just, you know, I have to do it manually sometimes, or every month actually. But if you have like a consistent salary, why not just set up every single bill you pay as an automatic payment? And it's easy. But at the same time, you do need to get a handle on how much you're spending, because this is like the easiest thing to let go. Like if you don't work out for 6 months, it's so easy to just let it go, and all of a sudden you're like, oh gosh, I need to get back in shape. But same thing with money. Like if you don't pay attention to your finances, it just gets out of control. And all of a sudden you look and you're like, oh my gosh, my credit card is $10,000. Like, you know, I owe X amount in taxes. Like, it's like, you know, you just gotta, it's something you have to stay up with.
All right, so what are some of the books on finances that you guys would recommend?
That's the answer. I hand out Financial Peace by Dave Ramsey to young couples when they get married, typically in our family. I don't like Dave Ramsey, personally. He and I had a falling out when I started Google. I think 90% of what Dave Ramsey says is spot on. So, you know, the concepts of not carrying credit card debt, you know, being why the debt snowball is a great concept that's been around a lot longer than Dave Ramsey has, but it's a great concept as a strategy to pay down debt. It's really effective. Having emergency funds available and how many months you have. I mean, all of that is really good. So the book Financial Peace is, to me, is a very good beginner book Where Ramsey gets incredibly dogmatic, I wouldn't be quite so dogmatic. I would be a little more open to, hey, there's probably lots of different ways to do some of these things. So that's one that I've handed out somewhat against my will.
I think there's a couple authors, too, that, real quick, totally agree on Dave Ramsey. On, like, the theological side, there's some great, like, foundational books on giving. Like, David Platt, his book Radical, I think is excellent. I think Randy Alcorn, a lot of you probably have heard of him. He has some amazing resources on money, if you're, like, into that stuff.
Yeah.
Like, reading about, like, the theology of money.
He wrote The Treasure Principle, Randy Alcorn, which is a great introduction to theology of money. He also wrote, where's Bailey? God, Money, and Possession, which is a thicker, heavier read. I also have a book. If you want a copy, just let me know. It's a 30-page little booklet called First Fruits Giving that is much of what I talked about on Sunday. It expands on a lot of that. So just email me or send me a message on the city, and we'll get you a copy of that book.
I'd also throw in there, J. Wesley Richards has a book called Money, Greed, and God. And that, again, that's touching on the philosophical, theological side of things, which frames a lot of this practical. All right, this one's deeply practical. When and how often do you and your spouse discuss finances?
I love this question.
I think it's different for everybody. My wife, she doesn't really care. So I'm like Mark, my whole career has been massively fluctuating incomes. And, there were months I'd come home and say, honey, we made $100 this month. And she'd go, wow, that's great. I'd be like, really? So, for us, it is, we have to be really intentional about it because it's not something that is really on Sarah's radar. So what we learned is we have to sit down regularly and have me say, hey, here's where we are, here's what we're doing. And now after, many years, I get a lot more input from her around, what we're spending. And she really manages our daily money, just like daily expenses. But when it comes to investing and I'm looking for a nod. Am I? Okay, good. So, when it comes to investing, when it comes to where our money is and life insurance and those kinds of things, I handle that, and we just have to have little powwows probably once a month on spending and then maybe two or three times a year to talk about here's where we are against kind of our plan around things. I don't know if that makes sense.
Husbands, don't wait until you see the money go out with your wives. I used to do that all the time. I would like see that Kristen bought something and then I'd get all mad and like bitter, and then we get in a fight. But she's like, well, give me a budget. And I'd be like, oh, okay. But I think you can save yourself a lot of headache by having those conversations, especially as a married couple. Like, don't like lord it over your wife, but at the same time, I think if you can make a budget and kind of handle it beforehand, then I found typically spouses are like, great, like Kristen's totally happy spending X amount on clothes every month. Like she's, and it was just in my brain. I'm like, oh, she spent that. But I'm like, well, we never actually came up with a plan together. So it just, you need to have those conversations.
And Dan and I, if we kind of have a, I don't know if we have a set number, but we kind of know that amount that if that's going to go through our bank account, we need to call the other person and say that's going to go through our bank account. Right. And so, because Dan's not really into the day-to-day stuff, because I'm in front of my computer looking at numbers all day long. People at work tease me because I have like the 15-year plan. There are like five different versions of the 15-year plan because of all of the different variables that could possibly happen. Public school, private school, blah, blah, all of that kind of stuff. Anyway, so I know it's kind of ridiculous. But anyway, so we just kind of have that amount that if Dan's going to spend it, he's going to call me or text me and say, hey, this is going to go through the account, because he knows I'm going to call him if I don't know what it is and be like, I think somebody hacked our account. Somebody spent $100, because he never spends money. So
it's also really freeing to create a budget and have those conversations with your wife. Like, when you create one, you're like, oh, I finally know where my money's going. So it feels good.
So, and if one of you is passive on this, that I think to kind of cap out, you got to drag each other into it.
Yeah.
And so if one person's like, no, I'm good, you know, whatever you say, I'll do it. You got to drag each other into the conversations, which is, you know, my wife's a lot more wise than I am. So, you know, where she didn't, those things don't really matter to her, but her input is so valuable in our relationship. And we'll put Megan's 15-year plan out on the city for everybody.
All right, well, thanks, guys. Let's give them the panelists a hand. And as you can see, I've got a lot more questions up here, and you guys, this may have stirred some more questions on your own. They'll stick around for a little bit. Ask them, come up front, find them on a Sunday, shoot them an email, find them on the city. And also, if you're sitting here and saying, man, I'd really like to get some mentoring in this area, like it's a little more one-on-one, kind of processing where my finances are, again, come talk to myself, talk to one of these three, and we'll get you guys plugged in and get that worked out.
Can I ask one thing of the crowd? First of all, I had a really important question handed to me, which was, at what age should I start getting an allowance? And Sean, how old are you? 9. That's the right age. Sorry, Jason. And I know payback for that's going to be rough. The other thing I'd ask, just show of hands, who would like to do more on this topic? I mean, if we were to offer something a little more in depth at Park, would you be interested in that? Okay, that's helpful. Cool. Thanks.
And I know some of the back tables came in late. We didn't get all the sheets to you guys. Our toner ran out today, of all times, and so we're going to actually post those online. We'll get those to you later. So at the center of your table, you have a little quarter sheet, and it's got a few discussion questions on there. So why don't you guys take a few minutes. The goal of doing these seminars is to make practical the theology that we hear on a Sunday. So discuss those for the next 5 to 10 minutes, and then you guys are free. Thanks.